My friend Teddy almost set his house on fire. He used a counterfeit, you know, a fake wall charger. He had to go to the hospital.
My BFF Chloe was riding her bike and hit a ditch. Her helmet broken too. Now, she has a brain injury.
There is a cost to buying cheap. Do you want to pay the price?
Real products are tested for safety.
Go for real.
Visit ncpc.org/goforreal. Brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council and the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ruth Westheimer. And if you listen to WRCT Pittsburgh, you know that in most cases, size does not matter.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Well, my friends, if you're hearing this message, and it is a special message, it is because we are at the start of my paternity leave. Yes, it's been, it feels like it's been 3 years of pregnancy for my fiance. But I'm told it's been like 9.5 months. But I'm telling you, it's been like 3 years in my head. That phase is coming to an end, and I am going to be taking a little bit of time off. If you want to follow the news and adventure, at some point I will post something to my social media. But who knows what it's going to be like on the other side. So we've got some great themed episodes coming up for you. We've got a lot of different things planned. The news will continue and we will be here with you in one form or another. And then eventually I'm going to be back. It's quite exciting times, 2022, all of these incredible things. And I will be back with everybody. So keep an eye on my social media. Exciting times. Enjoy this next episode. One thing that absolutely delights me is Republican infighting. Fight amongst yourselves, please. Today, our deep dive into the grand old party not getting along with each other. One of the real questions that we are going to answer merely by observing the American political landscape for the next, I think in the next few months, it will become clear, is whether the sparks of a Republican civil war that we saw 2 months ago will turn into a fire. And there are sort of two possible paths forward. It's conceivable that right-wing media and the Republican Party will realize, whoa, we are in real rough shape. Trump lost the House for us in 2018. Trump lost the Senate for us in 2020. Trump lost the White House for us in 2020. We have nothing. So we have to unite. We can't have a Republican civil war where right-wing media and elected officials are on opposing sides. And even within the Republican Party, there could be a civil war between people like Mitt Romney and people like Lauren Bobo Boebert or Marjorie Taylor Greene. Right. So there's a number of different civil wars that could take place. The alternative is that there is a Republican civil war where one side of the Republican Party accuses the other of not having stood behind Trump enough, of being willing to compromise with Joe Biden, whatever. And that we see a civil war develop. Sean Hannity earlier this week signaled that he is at least willing to foment this civil war, apparently turning on Mitch McConnell and threatening at the time he was the Senate majority leader. Now he's the Senate minority leader, thanks to Democrats taking control of the Senate. Take a listen to this.
Mitch, I will give you an A+ on getting constitutionalist judges on the bench. Been great on judges. But frankly, it looks like it's time now you're going to go along with all of this nonsense, we need new leadership in the U.S. Senate. You can represent the people of Kentucky. You're showing basically right now that you're the king of the establishment Republicans that, frankly, have always had and remain having contempt for President Trump, but more importantly, the 75 million Americans that voted for him. Americans want somebody that will fight for their values and principles, not scheme behind closed doors with your buddy Chuckie Schumer. Every Republican in the Senate.
So much like with Maria Bartiromo, Sean Hannity's direct line to the president ended yesterday with the inauguration of Joe Biden. He knows Biden's not going to take his calls like Trump did. So Hannity wants to stay relevant in some way. And what's going on here is that Hannity believes he's still the decision maker and the influence peddler. Now, he may be. He may find a way to maintain that role, even though he doesn't speak to the president anymore. It would be really great for the left to have a battle between right wing media and Republicans. That is only good for the left. And it's just what Joe Biden needs to get going with some momentum. Republicans so busy with infighting that they are unable to obstruct the things that Joe Biden wants to do to clean up Trump's mess. And one other funny thing, you know, Hannity talks about maybe we need new leadership in the Senate. There is new leadership in the Senate because Democrats won the Senate. And Hannity, of course, means new Republican leadership. But the new Senate leadership is Democrats altogether. And this is going to be very, very interesting. Now, for people saying that I'm somehow being hypocritical on this, I'm not. I have said before, a divided Democratic Party with infighting is bad for Democrats, and a divided Republican Party is bad for Republicans. The difference is I want the Republican Party to be divided because it will be bad for them. I didn't want the Democratic Party to be divided because it was going to be bad for the left-wing movement. And so I'm consistent. Infighting is bad. I just am going to benefit from Republican infighting, and thus I'm fine with them doing that. Send me your thoughts, and we'll continue to monitor this over the next few days. This is a fascinating segment that goes to the limits of political loyalty, because there are some Trump supporters whose undying support for Trump has no limit. But for some Trump supporters, their support of Trump does have a limit, and that limit is called the coronavirus vaccine. You're going to be probably horrified by these clips. After a year of Donald Trump telling his own supporters that the pandemic isn't serious, calling it the China virus, that you don't need a vaccine, some of those Trump supporters now don't want the vaccine. They see the vaccine as liberal nonsense, especially as they see Joe Biden as the one who is so quickly accelerating vaccination. Nearly 3 million doses the last 2 days. We'll talk about that tomorrow, but that's very good news. So CNN sends their reporter Gary Tuchman to a diner in Boise City, Oklahoma, and it is compelling video. This county was a 92% Trump county back in November, but right now we have some conflicting numbers. We know that most Republican voters still like Trump. But about half of Republicans don't want the vaccine. As of last week, Trump now recommends to his followers that they get the vaccine. So we have a statistical conflict. They mostly like Trump, who's saying get the vaccine, but half of them don't want the vaccine. How does this conflict manifest? Gary Tuchman asks the diners questions about the vaccine. It got awkward and very ignorant. Let's take a look at the first clip.
It's breakfast time in Boise City, Oklahoma. And I have this question.
Does anybody in this restaurant think it's a good idea to take the vaccine?
No.
Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea. Anyone here, is a good idea to take the vaccine? Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea. Not one person here thinks it's a good idea? Complete quiet.
So that's already not so good. And then Gary Tuchman speaks to some specific people. And here, I would get the kids out of the room for this. This is ugly, ugly stuff that we're about to see. Take a look.
What do you think about the vaccine? Are you going to take the vaccine?
No, sir.
Tell me why.
Well, I don't trust the government and I don't trust Biden.
Chad and Misty Hughes are husband and wife. Neither of them plan to get the vaccine.
Just don't want to.
Why don't you want to? If you don't mind me asking.
Because when I take the flu shot, I usually get the flu, so there's no reason to take it.
Are you saying you think you'll get COVID by taking the COVID vaccine?
Probably.
Why are you thinking that? The research doesn't show that at all. It shows that it keeps people safe.
That's just my choice.
So that first guy is bad enough who says, I don't trust the government or Biden. Because remember, the vaccine was developed not because of Trump, but it was developed during Trump's administration. Trump is taking credit for it. Trump's people initially oversaw the initial distribution, which was completely abortive. But still, like, the first guy doesn't care. Now Joe Biden is president. Now is when that guy could get a vaccine, and he doesn't trust the government or Joe Biden. But the second guy, the flu shot usually gives me the flu. It can't happen. It's impossible. It doesn't happen. So I will assume that the COVID vaccine will give me COVID. That's not necessarily a Trump Biden thing. That's total vaccine ignorance. That appears to go beyond politics, although it seems to still exist more on the right than on the left. Let's look at another one of these absolutely horrifying clips.
These women are sisters, and they too are doubters.
Why are you doubtful?
They just started rolling them out.
Well, yeah, but this has been a worldwide effort by great doctors.
They claim that the flu can be cured, but still hundreds of thousands of people die from the flu.
Well, yes, a lot of people die from the flu, but not nearly as much as COVID.
This is a horrible pandemic, and this is like an amazing vaccine. These vaccines have come out. They're saving lives. I don't believe it.
No. I will just agree to disagree on this subject, I guess.
I'm just not going to take it.
She said they claim the flu can be cured, but people still die of the flu despite having a vaccine. So this is like the brain is it putty? Is it I don't know what to call it. No one claims the flu vaccine cures flu. The idea is the flu vaccine prevents flu in some, and in others it makes it less severe. But the flu vaccines are not nearly as effective as these coronavirus vaccines are. And if you wonder, how does someone get tricked by Trump into believing he's going to build a wall and that Mexico will pay for it, that he'll fix trade, that he'll put in a beautiful health care plan? These are the same people that believe the flu shot will give you the flu, right? These are the people we're talking about that fell for that stuff and were tricked into voting for Donald Trump. Here's another clip.
What if President Trump came out and was very robust and said, take the vaccine? I took it, even though I didn't tell anybody about it. It was kind of done secretly, but I think you should take it. He said it a little bit, but he hasn't been robust about it. If he was robust and said, take it, would you?
No.
Trump's a liberal New Yorker. Why would we listen to him either?
Did you vote for him?
He was the best option.
What's funny about that Trump voter who says, Trump's a liberal New Yorker, why would I listen to him anyway? That antipathy that came out there, that cultural clash, the diners in Oklahoma are like, this guy Trump in the end is just like a rich liberal New Yorker. That exists on Trump's behalf as well. And what I mean by that is the vast majority of Trump supporters, as I've said so many times, are the types of people that Donald Trump spent his life trying to stay away from. So it's fascinating stuff. But it is very disturbing to see these clips. And some of what these folks talk about, you know, it's like, what's more dangerous, getting COVID or the vaccine? The answer is obvious. Getting COVID is far more dangerous than any side effects you would have from the vaccine. Another question is, what's more dangerous, getting the virus or being that ignorant? Like, what other risks to their lives exist or are created because of the degree of ignorance that they exhibit during interviews like this? It is wacky, wacky stuff. And, you know, I told the story last week of I've spent time in rural northern Indiana. And while I don't agree with the political views of the people there, seeing it and seeing how basically you grow up in a church and on a gun range, that's what there is in northern Indiana, being told that guns and abortion are the two most important things. Of course, you're not voting for Democrats. Because you're for 18 years by the time you can vote, and longer by the time, you know, you're older. That's all that's there. And that's all that is your experience. Of course, you're not going to vote for Joe Biden based on what is publicly said. We have to understand these folks, because as ignorant as they are, if they don't get vaccinated, it's bad for all of us. And unfortunately, the sort of ignorance is bliss type of thing, it may work for them, but it's still dangerous for many others. So interesting segment there,
Gary Tuchman with CNN.
All right, so I alluded to this earlier. You have to see the level of chaos that the Mark Meadows Trump riot texts are causing in right-wing media. So let me reset the story for you first, and then we're going to just jump into something. It's genuinely delightful. I don't know how else to describe it. Earlier this week, Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney, member of the House committee investigating the January 6th riots, read a bunch of text messages reportedly sent from Fox News hosts and Donald Trump Jr. to Trump's then chief of staff, Mark Meadows. And despite going on air that day and for weeks downplaying the riots, it might have been Antifa, it was BLM, it wasn't real Trump supporters, I didn't actually see any Trump supporter being violent, as well as Trump's own son and all of these Fox News hosts doing that, on that day, they knew it was terrible and they knew it was Trump's problem and they were trying to get Trump on TV to make a statement, tell him to send everybody home. It exposes that everything they did after the fact was just dishonest cleanup and they knew exactly who was there that day and that it was very bad for Donald Trump, period. They knew it. They lied on TV to help Trump. No surprise. It's been confirmed. Now, all of the different factions are starting to go at each other because they don't know how to manage this. Last night, Sean Hannity, one of the people implicated in this entire fiasco, had a segment where he invited on Geraldo Rivera and this total right-wing nut, Dan Bongino, who just defends Trump always and forever. There's no situation where Bongino won't defend Trump. And Geraldo, even though he, you know, was a Trump supporter, is a friend of Trump, whatever, Geraldo actually stands up sort of for what's right and says to Hannity, listen, because Hannity's continuing to downplay the riots. He says, this was a riot. It was inspired by Trump supporters, period. And Hannity tries to interrupt and Geraldo says, wait a second, Sean, think back to when you sent those texts. Think back to your frame of mind when you realized these are Trumpists doing this and this is violent and this is terrible. And you texted Mark Meadows. Think back to that. And Bongino just loses it on Geraldo. Check this out.
Was the obvious difference between the riot that happened on January 6th and the 500 odd that you correctly cite as concerning and damaging to America, to our psyche, to our physical well-being, is that this was a riot that was unleashed, incited, and inspired by the President of the United States, which targeted
the heart of American democracy. The President didn't say, no, you could, The President said peacefully, stop. The President said peacefully, patriotically, march to the Capitol. That's your opinion. I don't even want to go down that road. That's not the question tonight. The question is this corrupt committee. The question is why this riot and not 574 other riots. The question is there any privacy in this country anymore, or do they get to release thousands more of individual private citizens' texts?
I beg you, Sean, to remember the frame of mind you were in when you wrote that text on January 6th, and when Laura did, and when Brian did, and when Don Jr. did. Remember the concern you had. Remember the frustration at our beloved 45th president.
Yeah, because I wanted a riot to end. How can he be doing this?
Why doesn't he say something? Why?
Okay,
but the point is he saw unfolding before your very eyes an attack on democracy.
Let me give it to
an
Dan.
An attack on the Constitution.
But the point is he did not call for that. He said peacefully. And then he did do it. Dan, you have less than a minute. We're running out of time.
Geraldo, we've been arguing about this forever. The backstabbing of the president you're engaging in is really disgusting. And it's really vile that you pretend to be this guy's friend and you continue to do this. I resent that.
He said Donald Trump, I don't care if you resent it, until he abandoned democracy. Let me respond. He abandoned the election results. And he refused,
march peacefully
he refused
and
to accept the will of the American people.
You heard it.
Nobody can hear you.
You heard it.
You got to leave it there.
And you stabbed him in the back. You heard it.
Thank you. Thank you both.
So it's not backstabbing. It's telling the truth. Geraldo is saying nothing controversial. It was a Trumpist riot. Sean Hannity knew it and texted Mark Meadows at the time to try to stop it. And now he's playing a completely different version of events on TV day in and day out. That's really it. Like, there's no more story. And Hannity pulls in Bongino to run interference, and they're starting to just go after each other. Geraldo is no sage, right? When Geraldo is the voice of reason, you know things have gotten a little bit wacky, but this is what you want to see. This committee has already done so much good in all that it has exposed, and all these people are more than willing to go after each other to save themselves. Remember that if Republicans had just gone along with the original committee, it is far less likely that all of this same damaging information would have come out. Why do I say that? Well, the original committee idea was, I believe these are the right numbers, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans. When they would send out subpoenas, the subpoenas would have to be signed off on not only by the Democratic chair of the committee, but by the Republican vice chair of the committee. It was going to be truly a committee that was not just going to have carte blanche to go fishing wherever they want. Republicans, and I'm not saying that that's what it is now, but Republicans said, we're not going to participate. We're protesting this entire thing. Unless we're also looking into, you know, the shooting of Steve Scalise 4 years ago or whatever else, we don't want to participate. So Nancy Pelosi found some Republicans willing to be on it. Liz Cheney's on it. Adam Kinzinger is on it. Don't remember if there's any other Republicans, but at least the two of them. And now you have a situation in which they, by virtue of Republicans saying, we're basically opting out of this thing, and at least at the party level, we don't support it, even if you found a couple of our people to be on this committee. Now they are actually doing really good work and exposing incredible things. There was a PowerPoint for the coup. All these people who for months have been doing media saying it wasn't what it was, on that day knew exactly what it was and were texting Mark Meadows and saying, please help to stop it. So it's excellent that the committee is doing this. It's exactly the type of infighting and bedlam that we want to see within the Republican Party. Bongino, Hannity, Geraldo, have them all fighting. That's exactly what we want. They will turn on each other to protect themselves. That's abundantly clear. If you say, hey, the riot was inspired by Trump, which obviously it was, they accuse their own of backstabbing. And Geraldo is or was a Trumpist. I mean, he makes it clear even in that segment. The difference is that Hannity and Bongino will never admit that Trump did anything wrong. Geraldo will admit it, and he'll still say he is or was my friend, and I did or do support him. It takes nearly 80-year-old Geraldo Rivera to apparently realize that what took place on January 6th was not just partisan bickering or a rally. It was something much darker and much more sinister, and hopefully this level of chaos will continue. So, okay, we looked in the last segment at the cognitive dissonance being experienced by many former and recent Trump supporters because Trump stated the simple fact to Candace Owens that vaccines work and they are good and the people dying of COVID disproportionately are unvaccinated. All absolutely true. One of the people triggered by this is conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. Now, many of you emailed me and said, David, you've got to cover that Alex Jones' wife was arrested for domestic violence over the weekend. And yes, it's hypocritical that now Alex Jones says this is private when he didn't seem to think that the specifics of what was going on and the families of the victims of Sandy Hook were private. You know, I get the hypocrisy. I don't really care about Alex Jones' personal life. What I do care about is Alex Jones now completely turning on Donald Trump. Alex Jones, after this Candace Owens Donald Trump interview, came in for a so-called emergency Christmas show in order to sound the alarm, as he sees it, about what Donald Trump said, suggesting that Donald Trump might be ignorant, he might be evil, or he might be both ignorant and evil, and saying that Trump lied in his interview with Candace Owens. So check this out. This is really, it's the stuff of dreams, these factions fighting in this way. Take a look.
Is an emergency Christmas Day warning to President Trump. You are either completely ignorant about the so-called vaccine gene therapy that you helped ram through with Operation Warp Speed, or you're one of the most evil men who has ever lived. To push this toxic poison on the public and to attack your constituents when they simply try to save their lives and the lives of others. We're about to lay out the basic incontrovertible facts that what you told Candace Owens just a few days ago is nothing but a raft of dirty lies.
So Jones goes on to recite endless debunked anti-vaccine lies, which I'm not going to play since I don't want to have to debunk it piece by piece. But Jones does mention that the vaccines are so-called gene therapies. Now, that's not true. The vaccines don't change your genes. They don't stay in your body more than a few days. The vaccines are genetically based therapies. They're based on messenger RNA genetic material. The vaccines don't enter the cells of the nucleus. And we could go on, but Alex Jones is lying, and that probably doesn't surprise you. The most interesting part of this is the people turning on Trump over something so uncontroversial. Many right-wingers will try to soften their anti-vaccine stances by saying, I'm not against vaccines, I'm against mandates. How many times have we heard that? In his interview, Trump said, people should still have freedom not to take it, but the vaccines are good and the vaccines work. And he's still getting crushed. So all of the people saying we're only against the mandates, not the vaccines, in the interview, Trump said, I'm not for the mandates. I'm just for the vaccine. And they're still going nuts. Trump said the vaccines are good and they work. And Alex Jones is saying this is evil and these are gene therapies. So were they against the mandates only, or are they actually against the vaccines? It seems pretty clear. As I've said before, the more that these people are fighting with each other, the less they'll be able to put together functional 2022 campaigns. Now, my preference would be that Democrats help themselves in 2022. It's unclear whether that's going to happen. So any help that we can get from the right, I will gladly take. This also shows us that the idea of big tent on the right is completely bogus. If you veer off script for a day, they come right at you. And Trump even tells lies in that clip with Candace Owens, lies that typically titillate his followers. But just saying, hey, the vaccines work, it's mostly unvaccinated people that are dying, it sent a huge portion of his followers into a tailspin. It's hard to imagine this ends well for them, and that's a good thing. It's a sort of circular firing squad that is buying more and more ammunition to use against each other. Also, consider how Trump said nutty things for 4 years, and these people were calm. He says vaccines work and they go nuts. Trump said, what if we nuke a hurricane? He drew with a Sharpie on a hurricane map. He said, what about injecting bleach? You know, I could list 30 things. They're explaining it all away throughout Trump's presidency. Trump says vaccines work and suddenly they implode. These are incredible times that we are living in. The hope is this damages Republicans in 2022. We'll have these clips on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. Make sure you're following me at David.Pakman as well.
Here's something really interesting. This is sort of related to the Marjorie Taylor Greene Twitter and Facebook ban. About, what was it, like a month ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that, I played a video clip for you of Republican Congressman Dan Crenshaw, who is a Trump guy. There's no doubt about it. Dan Crenshaw is a Trump guy, criticizing the so-called Freedom Caucus of the House of Representatives, which is a very Trumpy caucus, saying these people are performance artists and they are not, at the end of the day, really the people that voted in support of what Donald Trump wanted. This conflict between Crenshaw and people like Marjorie Taylor Greene is now like two trains barreling towards each other, because after this ban stunt from Marjorie Taylor Greene, by stunt, I mean how she reacted to it, Dan Crenshaw has much more directly attacked her, and Marjorie Taylor Greene has now turned on him. So let me kind of explain it all to you. In the immediate, hold on, let me get this all looking correct here. In the immediate aftermath of her being banned, Dan Crenshaw posted that Marjorie scoffed at the notion of supporting anti-censorship legislation is indicative of her true intent to remain a victim. She doesn't want solutions, and she doesn't care if you get censored. She just wants to be a victim so she can keep asking you for campaign donations. It's a scam. Dan Crenshaw is 110% correct here. He's 110% correct. Now understand that what he was advocating for was seriously heavy regulation of platforms like Twitter and Facebook. So he is a hypocrite in the sense that he is part of the party that says we should do as little regulation of business as possible. Regulating businesses, socialism. He's talked on the Joe Rogan show about his belief about what socialism is, and it's a very, very wrong belief. So he was ignoring his supposedly sincerely held beliefs about a light government regulatory touch, saying, let's regulate these companies. But he is correctly pointing out that Marjorie Taylor Greene had the opportunity to support anti-censorship, as they call it, legislation, and that what she is doing is a scam to raise campaign contributions. He's completely right. He also posted, I think this is on his Instagram, hey, by the way, Marjorie, isn't this you? This was the moment you went for a few drinks instead of voting on the NDAA. Before bringing up missed votes, you might want to check your own record. This is after Marjorie Taylor Greene said to Dan Crenshaw, hey, you've missed votes as well. This is a picture of Marjorie Taylor Greene sitting at a bar when apparently voting was taking place on NDAA. The substance of this matters less than the fact that two pro-Trump Republicans, that's what they are fighting with each other. Crenshaw went on to say, hey, Marjorie, if suggesting we should follow Trump policy instead of Biden mandates makes you mad, then you might be a Democrat or just an idiot. So very big attacks, Trump on Trump violence. Crenshaw then posted, guess some people woke up today and tried to compete for biggest idiot on the internet. Then going on to say, seeing a lot of manufactured outrage by some people lately. They're worried they're losing their grip on your attention because they are. They lash out in the hopes you'll pay attention to them. Kind of sad, really. Dan Crenshaw is totally right here about what Marjorie Taylor Greene is doing. These are what we call, what I call ASBs, attention-seeking behaviors. And Crenshaw went on to say, and Marjorie, instead of playing the victim about censorship, maybe use your position as a legislator to help pass legislation against censorship. Luckily, I've already done all the hard work for you and drafted a bill that would change Section 230 to prohibit political censorship. Want to co-sponsor before I introduce it? Or do you prefer to keep up with petty and childish attacks? Your call. Marjorie Taylor Greene completely then losing it on Dan Crenshaw, saying Dan Crenshaw is posting creepy stalking pictures of me, referring to the picture from the bar, and harassing me to co-sponsor his big tech bill that he says stop censorship. But his bill actually gives more protection to online porn companies. Very, very weird thing to post. And then lastly, she wrote, no thanks, Dan. We need to get rid of porn. I am busy reading other Republican stop big tech censorship bills. Gosh, and to think all of this started when I just disagreed with him when he said FEMA should be doing mass COVID testing and working in hospitals. All I said is, no, we don't want FEMA doing any of that. And hospitals need to hire back unvaccinated healthcare workers. Then poof, I'm kicked off Twitter. Did I offend Dan's globalist friends at the World Economic Forum? This is really great. I have to tell you guys, I wish that the left was more competently preparing for 2022 and 2024. I think the left may be heading for a disaster, but Trumpists fighting with Trumpists is a really, really good thing. And just to remind everybody, here's that original clip where Dan Crenshaw seemed to start expressing some disdain for the grifters like Marjorie Taylor Greene and others without naming them directly. Remember this?
Supporting these two. There's actually other veterans in Morgan's race. There's other front runners. But why support these two? Well, because I've been in Congress for almost 3 years now. There's two types of members of Congress.
Right.
There's performance artists and there's legislators. Now, the performance artists are the ones that get all the attention. They're the ones you think are more conservative because they know how to say slogans real well. They know how to recite the lines that they know that our voters want to hear. Let me tell you guys something. In the first 2 years of Trump's presidency, when Republicans were in control, when every single time we were voting on Donald Trump's agenda,
Who do you think was at the top of that list voting with Trump, and who do you think was at the bottom?
Yep.
A lot of names you would recognize were at the bottom of that list. Yep. A lot of names you would recognize are at the top of that list. Number two is probably going to make you cringe a little bit. It's Adam Kinzinger. Voted with Trump almost 99%. He was number two.
So the important thing, the important takeaway here is that these are all Trumpists in some sense. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a Trumpist in the way that she has completely abandoned even talking about policy, spreads lies, disinformation. It's kind of like the cartoonish weaponized Trumpist. But what Dan Crenshaw reminds us is that a lot of the people that we on the left might say, they're not that bad. Liz Cheney. Wow. She said Biden really won. That's really great. Adam Kinzinger. Hey, he was willing to vote to convict Trump on impeachment. He was willing to support impeachment of Donald Trump. He's a member of the House, not the Senate. And we say, wow, these people are kind of more reasonable. They vote with Trump all the time, all the time. And so they are not our political allies. Dan Crenshaw is absolutely right. Let's hope that this Trump on Trump civil war continues, because the left needs something to help us along this year. On the Tuesday show, we talked about the undeniable reality that with the start of Trump rallies this past weekend in support of 2022 candidates, the 2022 midterms have sort of officially, they've unofficially officially begun. We are now, the rallies are starting. It's all starting to happen. But there's another election that I normally would not be talking about right now, but I don't think I have a choice because it's very clear has also officially begun. The 2024 Republican primary has begun. How can you tell? You can tell because Donald Trump and Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who previously were buddies, united around COVID and we're all for freedom, and Ron's doing a great job opening up for WWE and UFC when everything else is closed early in the pandemic. They're now attacking each other and pretty brutally. And Trump has even started to send his cronies like Roger Stone to attack Ron DeSantis. Why Ron DeSantis? Because Ron DeSantis is Donald Trump's primary challenger right now, based on polling for 2022. So let's go through this piece by piece. Axios has a report. Trump dogs dull DeSantis ahead of potential 2024 matchup. This is from Jonathan Swan. Donald Trump is trashing Ron DeSantis in private as an ingrate with a dull personality and no realistic chance of beating him in a potential 2024 showdown, according to sources who have recently talked to Trump about DeSantis. Why it matters. The two are among the most popular Republicans in the country. As the former president eyes a 2024 run, he is irked by DeSantis's popularity and refusal to rule out running against Trump. DeSantis is a favorite of Republican voters when pollsters remove Trump. The governor also hasn't been beyond tweaking his fellow Floridian. DeSantis said on the Ruthless podcast, one of his biggest regrets was not speaking out much louder in March of 2020 when Trump advised the American public to stay home. This is accurate in the sense, what I mean is, Trump correctly sees DeSantis as his biggest foe for 2024. As of right now, we had the CPAC straw poll over the summer. Donald Trump topped everybody else with 70%, but in second place was DeSantis with 21%. That's an informal survey. When you look at the betting markets where people can bet who will win the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, right now, 37 cents of every dollar are being bet on Donald Trump, and 28 cents of every dollar are being bet on Ron DeSantis. That's a smaller gap than the straw poll in July suggested. We also have so-called real polling. There's a Harvard Caps Harris poll from 2 months ago where Donald Trump was polling 47% among registered Republicans and independents in the primary poll. And that was very far ahead of DeSantis, who was at 10%. But again, everywhere you look, Ron DeSantis is running second. Sometimes it's a pretty distant second. Sometimes it's a pretty strong second. So now Trump is starting the attacks, and so are Trump's cronies. Remember this from last week? Here is Donald Trump in his interview with OAN calling out Ron DeSantis. He doesn't say his name. He doesn't say his name, but it's abundantly clear that he's talking about Ron DeSantis here as someone who has gotten the booster and won't admit it.
It's something out there. But after now so many months of the vaccine being administered and these side effects and Americans' questions of it, do you reconsider your push for it, or what's your view now on the vaccine in general?
Well, I've taken it. I've had the booster. Yep. Many politicians, I watched a couple of politicians be interviewed, and one of the questions was, did you get the booster?
Now, that he's talking about DeSantis here. There's no question.
Because they had the vaccine. And they're answering it like, in other words, the answer is yes, but they don't want to say it. Because they're gutless. You got to say it. Whether you had it or not, say it. But the fact
so that is an indirect attack on Ron DeSantis. And then also Roger Stone has been going out there as Trump's kind of lapdog, for lack of a better term. Roger Stone publishing to, I think this was on Getter or Rumble, or I don't know who the hell knows. Roger Stone saying Trump sometimes President Donald Trump hits it right on the nose. Ron DeSantis, Yale, Harvard, fat boy, can't get out of his own way. Not smart, not honest, and not going to be president. An unknown congressman with a bad haircut and an ill-fitting suit until Donald Trump made him governor. I know where he was when he was missing. Ask Emerald Robinson. That's a reference, of course, to when Ron DeSantis was MIA for 2 weeks in the sort of middle to end of December of last year. We covered that. Ron DeSantis also being attacked by Roger Stone in a new video that has been released.
Here's my beef with Governor Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis was an unknown congressman with a bad haircut, an ill-fitting suit, and an undistinguished record in Congress until President Donald Trump's endorsement lifted him to the Republican nomination for governor of Florida. And then, because Ron is such a boring and piss-poor candidate, President Donald Trump, with the able assistance of Susie Wiles, had to visit Florida twice to drag Ron over the finish line to become governor of Florida. Now, Governor Ron DeSantis refuses to put his own presidential ambitions on hold until President Donald Trump has decided whether he wants to run again.
So that's interesting. What Roger Stone is saying is that the correct thing to do, the respectful thing to do to show deference to Trump, would be for Ron DeSantis to say, this is Donald Trump's nomination to turn down. I'm not ruling anything out, but I would not run against him. That would be what Roger Stone believes would be respectful.
I consider that to be an incredible act of disloyalty and ingratitude. Governor DeSantis says that I'm a convicted felon. Well, actually, I'm a former convicted felon, thanks to the pardon by Donald Trump. But if Ron DeSantis isn't careful, he will soon be a former governor of Florida without the active support of President Donald Trump.
So that's a reference to 2022, because remember that one of the most interesting 2022 gubernatorial races is that of Ron DeSantis, right? And I want to make sure I'm not getting that wrong. Ron DeSantis 2022 campaign. Yes. Okay. Yes. Ron DeSantis is running. He's up for re-election in 20. Just making sure I get that right. So why are they so aggressively going after DeSantis? Because they see DeSantis as a threat. It's very clear that this is 2024 posturing. It is not only the Trump side attacking DeSantis, as I told you before, Ron DeSantis saying he wishes that earlier he would have pushed back against the things that Donald Trump was doing and saying early in the pandemic. New York Times reporting, Mr. DeSantis shot back Friday, criticizing Trump's early handling of the pandemic and saying he regretted not being more vocal in his complaints. This is potentially a fascinating showdown in 2024. And my priority in it is not just the kind of disaster porn of a really ugly Trump versus DeSantis primary. I would love that from an entertainment perspective. But at the same time, going from the entertainment side to the important practical matter, I think 2024 is going to be really tough for Democrats. If it's Trump versus Biden, I think Trump wins. If it's Trump versus Kamala Harris, I think Trump wins. If it's DeSantis versus Biden, I feel less strongly, but I still would lean towards DeSantis. I mean, I think there's a real uphill battle here. And of course, there's a lot that needs to happen. The 2022 midterms, two more years of governing, and then we will see. But I'm not feeling thrilled about any of this. So what I'm hoping for is that a really ugly Republican primary damages whoever is the eventual nominee. We're getting very, very far ahead of ourselves. But that's the thought process right now. I have for you today one of the craziest political stories that I have ever covered. And it might not seem that crazy because it has been slowly building. But former Vice President Mike Pence has now turned on Donald Trump publicly in a speech at the Federalist Society in Florida over the weekend. And Donald Trump has reacted by completely losing it on Mike Pence. It is not normal that a former president and vice president, just 13 months after leaving office, are in such public conflict. Mike Pence publicly now has said that he had no ability or right to overturn the results of the 2020 election. And Trump doesn't like that because Trump wanted Pence to steal the election. This is part of the growing civil war in the Republican Party. And let me tell you clearly and directly, this is not normal. It is not normal for a president and a vice president to have such major public disagreement so quickly after leaving office. And it is not over something minor. This is something major. The ex-president says he won, and the vice president could have flipped the results. The ex-vice president says, we didn't win, and I have no right to change the results. This is a disagreement as big as anybody could imagine, dealing with the most fundamental and crucial elements of how our democracy is supposed to work. Let's go to the clip. Here is Mike Pence.
President Trump said I had the right to overturn the election. President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. The presidency belongs to the American people.
True.
And the American people alone. And frankly, there is no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president. Under the Constitution, I had no right to change the outcome of our election. And Kamala Harris will have no right to overturn the election when we beat them in 2024.
All right. Well, listen, maybe. But Pence is correct in what he is saying there. And Donald Trump very quickly, completely triggered, putting out a statement saying, quote, just saw Mike Pence's statement on the fact that he had no right to do anything with respect to the electoral vote count other than being an automatic conveyor belt for the old crow Mitch McConnell to get Biden elected president as quickly as possible. That was one sentence. Well, the vice president's position is not an automatic conveyor if obvious signs of voter fraud or irregularities exist. That's why the Democrats and rhinos are working feverishly. Interesting. I would describe this statement as febrile. Interesting that Trump uses the word feverishly. Working feverishly together to change the very law that Mike Pence and his unwitting advisors used on January 6th to say he had no choice. The reason they want it changed is because they now say they don't want the vice president to have the right to ensure an honest vote. In other words, I was right and everyone knows it. Now, of course, that's not true. The truth about that is, pre-Trump, there was no disagreement as to the vice president's ability to flip an election because it even came up in 2020. And the now former president was pushing Pence to do this. There is a move to strengthen the language to make it even more clear. But the vice president does not have the opportunity or ability to change election results. Trump lastly says, if, in other words, I was right and everyone knows it, if there is fraud or large scale irregularities, it would have been appropriate to send those votes back to the legislatures to figure it out. The Dems and rhinos want to take that right away. A great opportunity lost, but not forever. In the meantime, our country is going to hell. Folks, this is not normal. This really is kind of like an end of days type situation, which hopefully just won't actually lead to the end of days. That's the hope that this is just OK. Yeah, this is crazy. but he's out of power and he's not going to be back in power. That's the optimistic scenario. Now, it's very important to mention at this point, it seems abundantly clear that if Trump does run in 2024 and wins the nomination, his running mate is not going to be Mike Pence. I can only imagine who it would be. That would be an interesting choice, and I would assume it would be someone even more radical than Pence. Now, I think there's an important disclaimer to make here. As far as Pence being the good guy, this is too little too late. It has been 13 months since the attempted insurrection. He was just doing his job. And what I mean by that is he can't overturn the election. It was crazy that Trump even tried to get him to attempt it. Pence caused a ton of damage during his reign as vice president. He said almost nothing about this until now. He doesn't get a medal. Pence is horribly toxic. He couldn't overturn the election. He didn't choose not to overturn it. He couldn't overturn it. All he's saying now is, it's true. I couldn't overturn it. Imagine not killing someone in January of 2021 after your friend urges you. Your friend goes, please kill this person. You don't do it. And then in February of 22, you go, I was right not to kill anybody. Right. Murder's illegal. You don't get a cookie for reminding us that 13 months ago, you did the only thing you could do. You couldn't overturn the election and you didn't. You don't get a cookie for that. Now, what's the upside here? The upside is what we're soon going to discuss, which is that this rift between Pence and Trump adds to the Republican fragmentation. Here's an example. Here is former Trump propagandist Stephen Bannon attacking Pence over this.
Pence, you're going to carry this thing eventually to your grave, okay?
Ooh.
Because it is a mark of shame, and you are a stone-cold coward. A stone-cold coward. Boris Epstein, we're going to start with numbers and analysis.
Yeah. So Pence could have done nothing else. The only thing Pence could do was not try to overturn the election because he does not have the right or the power to overturn the election. It was the law. It was the Constitution. But it's furthering the rift within the Republican Party. And I argue that that is a... All right, let's start today. I guess we're calling this game, Do You Buy It? We've talked before about the people who have sort of softly come out against Donald Trump who were previously associated with him. We've also talked about the people who criticize him, but then when it really comes down to it, they go, I'd vote for him again. Earlier this week, William Barr, Trump's former attorney general, said the 2020 election stuff Trump was saying was BS. He was out of control and he brought out a clown show of lawyers. And then when Savannah Guthrie said, OK, but if he's the nominee, are you voting for him? And he's like, well, I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. So that's horrifying and disgusting. I have a different example for you today. This is one of Donald Trump's former White House press secretaries, Stephanie Grisham. My opinion is that she, when it comes to Trump, has truly denounced him in a way where she's saying she's out. And here in this particular clip on The View, not on The View, on some other show, maybe this is The View, she says he's a con man and I'm sorry and I don't want people to vote for him. What do you guys think?
But my point is now, I messed up. I am sorry. I will say that till the end of time. But I want to give people an off-ramp. And I'm going to do everything I can to educate people, not talk down to them, educate people about who he really is,
yeah.
That he is a con man, that it is a cult-like thing, and that it's okay to just get off.
So you would.
Okay. It is The View. So listen, I'm not saying let's go out and elect Stephanie Grisham to anything. She's not running for anything, as far as I know. But if we're going to kind of categorize these things, you know, Michael Cohen, who we've had on the show, he genuinely has denounced Trump fully and is cooperating to the extent that he can to hold Trump accountable. And I buy that he's off the train completely. William Barr, I mean, I think he's trying to sell books. I think he does recognize Trump was nuts, but at the same time, he even said I'd vote for the guy. Grisham strikes me as being closer to Cohen than to Bill Barr, with the important difference that Michael Cohen has said, I've always been a Democrat and I'm back to being a Democrat. Stephanie Grisham, as far as I know, is still a Republican. And the off-ramp she's talking about is an off-ramp more than likely to people like, I don't know, Mitch McConnell, Mitt Romney, maybe, or who knows what. So I'd put her closer to Cohen. I do think she's sincere. But at the end of the day, I still don't want her deciding who the president is. Let me know your thoughts. What do you think about her level of sincerity? So as we get into the spring and eventually the summer, we're going to be talking more and more about 2022 primary races and midterm races and just races in general, as many of you know. There's an interesting Senate race happening in Ohio. This is the race in which J.D. Vance, who is the author of the book Hillbilly Elegy, which really wasn't a bad book, but he's gone completely off the rails. J.D. Vance is a candidate. Trumpist Josh Mandel is a candidate. And at a recent debate within this race, a physical fight almost broke out, which included you guys. I'm sure anybody who's been to a bar knows these situations where it's two men. I've never seen women do this at a bar. They start doing the thing where they puff up. It's almost like a peacock or, you know, certain animals that kind of like there's some frogs that like blow up their chest and certain birds. I don't know if titmice do it or what kind of birds. They kind of just start puffing themselves up and start almost chest bumping. And it's kind of like a battle to see who will back down first. That, which normally is happening at bars, took place at the Republican primary debate. It's really, really wacky. The Times of Israel reporting near fight at Ohio Republican Senate debate between candidates Josh Mandel and Mike Gibbons. After Mandel repeatedly interrupts him, Gibbons accuses the former soldier of not knowing how investments work, which was a fair criticism, leading the latter to stand up and accost his rival. And we have video of this. If you're only listening, you'll have to imagine what it's like, although we'll have the clip up on our Instagram and on our TikTok. These are the front runners, guys, and we'll look at polling in a moment. But this is how cartoonish and childish and pathetic some of these races are. Check this out.
I've never been in the fight.
No, you don't.
I do.
You've never been in the private sector in your
life. All right, gentlemen.
I worked, sir.
Josh, watch.
Josh.
Two tours in Iraq.
Don't tell me I haven't worked. Don't tell me I haven't worked.
You don't know squat.
It's okay, right?
You don't know squat.
Two tours in Iraq. Don't tell me I haven't worked.
Back off, buddy.
You back off.
Come on.
I never let him have
it. Sit down.
Never.
Watch.
Watch.
We squared away with him.
Yeah,
wrong dude.
You're dealing with the wrong guy.
You watch what happens. So threats being issued. Now, I don't know. You know, you guys will have to tell me who comes off as the alpha male in that situation. It's genuinely hard for me to tell. And meanwhile, J.D. Vance, who did not participate in that, but is part of this race, sat to the side thinking, obviously, this really benefits me, although he's not polling that well. These are the front runners in the Ohio Republican Senate primary. We have the polling here. The latest here is these are average. Gibbons is polling 20. Mandel is at 18.7. So that's basically a tie. It's almost within the margin of error. J.D. Vance is down at 11%. And two other candidates, Timken and Dolan, are almost where J.D. Vance is, Patel with a point and a half. So that's an interesting race. And what's fascinating about it is the least delusional people. Well, I can't even say that. The most obviously delusional people are some of the ones doing the best. Mandel is an absolute lunatic. I mean, just a complete and total lunatic. And if you actually go and look at his political record, you see that this is just a massive, massive pro-Trump guy, and he has backed the election fraud claims of Trump. He says that the 2020 election was stolen. He says if he wins, he will carry forward Trump's agenda. Now, what's funny about that is it's not clear Trump really had an agenda other than just self-aggrandizement and putting himself in positions of power. He said the Trump impeachment was a sham. He will fight for the America First agenda. He says we will soon see the evidence coming out of the widespread voter fraud. I mean, that's verbatim what Trump says. And he's tied for first place, essentially tied for first place with Gibbons. So it's a very difficult primary to kind of make heads or tails out of because so many wacky people in there and they don't seem to be hurt by saying and doing crazy things. We'll see if the polling in any way is impacted. If anybody is going to benefit from that confrontation, You would think it would be J.D. Vance, although there might be Republican voters who like that and who say, no, I liked Gibbons before and I liked that Gibbons didn't back down. Or I liked Mandel before and I liked that Mandel didn't back down, and they both puffed up their chests. At this point, I don't pretend to know what Republican voters are going to like, but we'll soon see it reflected in the polling.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I think what happens with these hearings is that this shows, you know, voters that they have a choice. What type of future United States do they want? Do they want one where the will of the people can be overthrown? Or would they like to continue to have fair and free elections?
After 10 months of meeting in private, the House committee investigating Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 election and the deadly January 6th insurrection is holding its first public hearing tonight in prime time. Democracy Now! Will be live streaming it. As five members of the far-right Proud Boys are indicted for seditious conspiracy, we'll speak with the head of Right Wing Watch. But first, a top UN official is warning reports of sexual violence by Russian troops in Ukraine are rising fast.
Although there is never accurate bookkeeping on an active battlefield, it is clear that in the context of Ukraine, all the warning signals for the commission of atrocity crimes, including conflict-related sexual violence, are flashing red.
We'll speak to Pramila Patten, the UN Special Representative on Sexual Violence and Conflict, as well as the head of Amnesty International in Ukraine. And will air shocking testimony from a House hearing on gun violence. Speakers included an 11-year-old girl who survived the school massacre in Uvalde, Texas.
When I went to the barracks, he shot my friend that was next to me. And I thought he was going to come back to the room. So I grabbed the blood and put it all over me.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The House of Representatives approved a package of limited reforms to federal gun laws. The Protecting Our Kids Act passed Wednesday by a vote of 223 to 204, mostly along party lines, with five Republicans in support and two Democrats voting against it. The bill would raise the minimum age for purchasing semi-automatic firearms from 18 to 21, ban magazines of more than 15 rounds, and toughen penalties for gun traffickers and straw purchasers of firearms. The House approved the reforms after lawmakers heard hours of harrowing testimony from survivors of gun violence. 11-year-old Mia Cirillo described how she survived the Uvalde school shooting by covering herself in the blood of her friend and playing dead before using her dead teacher's cell phone to call 911. Also testifying was Zanetta Everhart, the mother of a survivor of last month's domestic terror attack on African Americans in the Tops supermarket in Buffalo.
To the lawmakers who feel that we do not need stricter gun laws, let me paint a picture for you. My son, Zaire, has a hole in the right side of his neck, two on his back and another on his left leg. Caused by an exploding bullet from an AR-15. As I clean his wounds, I can feel pieces of that bullet in his back. Shrapnel will be left inside of his body for the rest of his life. Now I want you to picture that exact scenario for one of your children.
Police in Maryland have arrested a man they say plotted to kidnap or kill the Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. 26-year-old California resident Nicholas John Roski was reportedly found carrying a knife and a gun outside Kavanaugh's home in Montgomery County. Prosecutors say Roski was having suicidal thoughts and was upset by a leaked draft opinion showing the court's conservative majority prepared to strike down abortion rights under Roe v. Wade. Attorney General Merrick Garland promised a swift response.